This is Pierre Bouvier, lead singer of the band Simple Plan. I could sing a song for you, Wine 30, with Andrew and Lindsay. Here we go. Andrew and Lindsay hosting Wine 30. Andrew and Lindsay. Through all the best and many more years to come tonight. I'm just a kid. Many more years to come. Peace.
I was just thinking how much I love our theme song.
Do you still like really like it?
I do. I love it. It's very like nostalgic, but also like new.
Yeah.
Speaking of nostalgic, I started recording a new podcast this week with my friend Jessica, where we like interview people from the 90s and early 2000s. And I'm really pumped about it. So I just wanted to sneak that in there before we drink some wine.
Oh, I thought you were going to keep it a secret till you had a few.
Oh, no. We're not keeping it a secret.
Okay.
And it's going to be called like Totally Not Over It, because we're totally not over it.
Okay.
Yeah. He's like, good times. He hasn't even listened to it yet. We've recorded interviews and he hasn't even heard it. So this week we are drinking a Bodega de Edgar 2017 Tempranillo. And this is from Paso Robles, California. And I guess Paso Robles no longer makes Tempranillos. Really, like there's very few vineyards that still make Tempranillos in that area.
Wonder what prompted that.
I think just like the weather changing and like the droughts and stuff. But this says that it has black cherry, anise, leather, and vanilla extract flavors, and that the finish is like a dark cocoa powder and a whiff of baked earth.
She poured me a hefty pour.
Yeah, because I did a very light pour for myself. So I was like, yeah, Andrew's been wanting to drink this Tempranillo for a couple weeks now. So.
Yeah, it tastes like a classic Tempranillo.
A California Tempranillo or a Spanish Tempranillo?
That's a good question, I guess.
I mean, I guess they probably taste very similar.
Yeah, it's peppery.
I actually feel like a lot of Tempranillos we get are also from like Chile or like Argentina.
I definitely get that cocoa touch at the end there.
And it's a dryness, which I like. I feel like sometimes Tempranillos are like overly acidic and almost like too fruity for me. But this is like a nice, like more peppery, dry, but still acidic.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy it. Do you want to guess the price on this?
I want to say like $35.
That's very, very close. Depending on which website, it retails for $36 to $39.
Nice.
So you are literally within about a dollar.
Gosh, I should get into like wine sales.
Right. Or like the person who chooses the price for wines, you should just go into wineries and be like, you should sell this for $54.
Yeah.
You should sell this for $39.
I know.
$22.
I should try to find a sensei who does teaches that.
A sensei?
Somebody who goes.
Wine pricing sensei. I mean, this, I like the label. It has like the craft papery type label.
Yeah.
And it's just like black, like print on it. I think it's nice. It's very simple, classy, but also modern.
Yeah. I like the label a lot.
I almost gave this wine to one of our neighbors. Andrew's like, you can't give that wine away.
It could probably be aged for like another year, I think.
Yeah. I feel like Tempranillos, like, how old is it now? 4 years. I feel like 4 to 6 years is about where you want to be drinking that at.
Yeah.
It's
approaching its prime.
I guess we should talk about what we've been watching this week.
I watched the new JoJo's Adventures.
Yeah.
Because they just came out with a new series. I didn't realize that their series are like 32 episodes or 36 episodes.
Yeah, like each season. Wasn't the last one like 40-something?
40-something, yeah.
I haven't really watched that show at all. Andrew had obviously watched it. And then today I wasn't feeling well. So I watched a couple episodes with him and I was like, this show's actually kind of funny.
Yeah. It's a little graphic, but I definitely think it hits like that classic. I think it's going to be pretty renowned.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be right up there with like, I don't know, Cowboy Bebop, but probably like,
I do hear like people who watched Cowboy Bebop. Now, if you're like, oh, what animes would you recommend? Like, I feel like JoJo's Bizarre Adventures is like one that those same people would recommend now.
Yeah. There's a lot of good anime. I guess it's like an anime boom right now because there's just so much good stuff. Hunter x Hunter is another good one, but I'm not sure if they're going to make any more of those.
I mean, speaking of anime, this week I was watching the new Sailor Moon Eternal on Netflix. It was like the two-part movie. So it was like an hour and a half as part one and an hour and a half as part two. It took me like, what, 3 or 4 nights to actually get through it all because I watched it at night. I really liked it.
What's the difference between anime and manga?
Well, manga isn't like anime is like animation, right? And then manga is usually like the books. Because I know my niece watches anime, but then she reads manga, which is like the back to front, like comic books.
Right. But some anime. So I guess.
So some anime is based on manga.
Or yeah. So that would be the difference is that if you have a manga, because I know sometimes they call the shows manga as well.
Do they?
Yeah. They'll be like manga.
I think it may have. They may just call it that if it's based off of.
Like if it comes from the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they sometimes go the opposite direction too.
Oh, for sure. I think Sailor Moon, actually I'm unsure which direction it went. I feel like it probably started as a show and then they created.
But what about.
The books, but.
The Boys, that TV series on Amazon?
That's not a manga though, right? It was a graphic novel.
It's not a manga. A graphic novel. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it read like manga. It was like. I think to be a manga, you need to be from Japan as well.
Yeah, maybe? It has to be from Japan, I think. And it has to be you start in the back of the book and then you read it backwards.
Yeah, I know.
Because in Japan, like their writing is different than here. I think that's the main difference, I think. But yeah. Sailor Moon Eternal was great. I liked the update. All the voices were great. The storyline was great. And then once I finished that, I then like, delved back into Sailor Moon Crystal, which is the one that's like 10 or so years old now. And then I enjoyed that. We also watched Cruella.
We did, yeah.
Which my mom loved Cruella. She's watched it twice already. And I feel like because there was so much hype behind it, I kept hearing like, oh, it's like The Devil Wears Prada. It's like these things. Like I thought I was going to love it so much more than I did because the CGI dogs really threw me off. But I would give it like, I'd give it a 7.5 out of 10.
It was very different than what I was expecting. I thought that it was going to follow more along the lines of the original.
Like the 101 Dalmatians.
Yeah. Because I remember Lindsay saying she was like, oh, she's going to get those dogs.
Well, I thought that like it was going to start with her origin story and then show her kidnapping like. The large amount of puppies yeah. And then like go back into the origin story. Like I thought that it was going to be included more so. Whereas really all we saw the 3 Dalmatians and then the reporter who she was friends with in school or whatever. She is the person who is the owner of all the little puppies in the movie 101 Dalmatians, Anita. And then there was another guy that worked there who was the guy who owned the like, was married to her or whatever in the 101 Dalmatians. But really, other than that, you don't really, I mean, you see Horace and Jasper, but.
Okay. So the idea behind the original cartoon, like being an adult looking back at it is kind of grotesque because there's like child captivity, right? They kidnap a child.
No.
Yeah.
You're thinking the Rescuers.
Oh,
maybe. And the Rescuers Down Under. They were around the same time. But 101 Dalmatians, they literally steal 101 Dalmatians to make a coat.
Which is also kind of grotesque. All those movies were kind of like dark in their own way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
like, you know, for children to be watching it, it's like, I don't know. I guess it's a light way to introduce that topic.
They did announce a sequel this week.
Yeah.
I'll probably watch it.
I'll probably just do it too, just because we're so ingrained. But I think that I was just expecting her to be evil. And they made her out to be kind of like a hero.
I still have a lot of mixed like feelings about it. I do feel like they were trying to like make her seem less of a villain, but at the same time, she was freaking villainous the whole time.
Right. But they also did something I didn't really enjoy that much, which is like pit women on women kind of thing.
The entire movie. Yeah.
They were like, oh, you got to be cutthroat against women competition, where I'm like,
There's only room for one of us.
I feel like when you work together, things a lot of times can be really great too. So I don't know.
Community over competition.
Yeah.
That's how I live my life.
I don't know if they did that on purpose or not, but.
We also finished the Kaminsky method. I did tear up a few times this season. I'm not going to lie. They just tackled a lot of grief and a lot of death in one season.
Yeah, they really hit those hard topics.
But it's also funny.
Yeah, and they also delved a little bit into, you know, what happens after you pass, like your assets and like how it impacts other people who then have to figure out, you know, what did your will mean, you know?
Yeah. And also they delved into like, what is it to accomplish your dreams like years and years after you expected yourself to, when you've already given up on that dream and then you achieve it later in life like that.
That's
like,
awesome.
How do you handle that?
Like, you know, at 60 or whatever, you're supposed to be like reflecting on
your accomplishments. 80? Yeah, supposed to be like 75, 80, but yeah.
It starts at 60. So it's like, you know, those people are now coming full bloom. So kind of recommend it. Kaminsky method.
Yeah, it's only three seasons because this was the last season. And I think it's only 8 to 10 episodes per season, and they're 20-minute episodes, so it's easy to get through. Great acting, great writing. I bet they win a ton of awards this coming year.
Yeah.
Again. Also, I watched the Friends reunion on HBO Max, and I actually had to like turn it off and then like restart it, or not restart it, but start from where I was like 3 or 4 times. It took me a long time to get through this reunion, but everyone kept raving about it. I don't know. I just feel like I wasn't that impressed, but I do love Phoebe still, like Lisa Kudrow, which we watched a, like her new Housebroken, the dog animated show she has. I still love Joey. I still love Rachel, but I don't know, like
I just never was really that attached to those people, and so like seeing them together doesn't really do anything for me really. And it's like I feel like every male my age had a crush on
Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, so like there's always going to be that like residual child, like, you know, puberty crush or whatever.
Which she still looks great.
She still looks really great, but I just know that like she's only the only one that I really care about. I really love Phoebe, but like
I enjoy seeing her on things, but I don't seek out things that she's done.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas if someone's like, oh, Jennifer Aniston has a new show out, like I'm probably going to go watch it.
Right. And she really hit that like generation's puberty, like, because that's really when she came, when I started watching Friends, is when I was like trying to figure things out, you know?
Well, and you were probably... Well, let's see. It went off the air when I was 12. So you'd have been 14 when it went off the air. So basically from the time you were like, what, 7 or 8 to 12.
So like for me, that's, I have a much different experience, I think, than somebody who's watching it an older age or whatnot.
I used to think Joey was just so cute.
I'm sure.
Because I'm pretty sure every girl liked one of them.
Yeah, because you kind of also went through that too, being, that's just part of being a millennial, you know? You're going to get that Friends.
You're going to have a crush on one of the Friends.
Right, like, nobody should ever have a crush on Ross.
People do. People love Ross. Yeah. People also love Chandler. I don't really see the appeal myself for either, but I don't know.
Yeah, what have you been reading?
I have not been reading much, but I'm having surgery next week, so I was like, I should start a book so that when I'm tired and in bed, I can like be reading something like really fun and lighthearted. So I have like a ton of books I need to get through, but I decided what I'm going to read next week is People We Meet on Vacation by Emily Henry,
okay,
which is supposed to be like a really fun romantic comedy beach read.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've been reading a few things. I've been reading Giants.
Oh.
And then
you've been reading Giants, the graphic novels.
Yeah. And then I've also been reading Red Sonja, mainly because I wanted to get to Red Sonja. Onto the sequels. But, and then I also started a book called The Watchmaker's Daughter. So I will tell you more about that next episode.
Which I've read parts of Giants back when I worked at the libraries. Like, they were very popular. So I would like flip through and read like 10 or 20 pages at a time quite frequently.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a really decent, especially, I feel like they aim it towards like young teenagers, but yeah, it's also like fun for adults.
It's just fun. Yeah, it's a fun. Good animation.
Yeah.
Good message behind it. I really want to read the Lost Apothecary, but
I have it on audiobook.
I know, but it's a prequel, I think.
No.
Or no,
No, I have the full one.
Well, it starts with The Watchmaker's Daughter, I think.
No. Same author possibly, but
okay.
Different book. And they're all on Book of the Month.
Oh,
it is
different author.
Oh, it's different author too.
No. Maybe the audiobook is different because it's got.
Oh, it's probably the same person reading.
Yeah.
The audiobook. But that's a Book of the Month Club one that you can snag, which is pretty cool.
I want to read it really bad.
So what have you been playing? Obviously some Town of Salem.
Town of Salem all day, every day. I did fire up the Civ 6. I just don't get that much enjoyment from it right now. I think it must come in waves.
I know when you first started playing it again, you were like,
I played for
on it nonstop for like
a day or two.
It was about a full week.
I don't think so.
And then as soon as you stepped away from it though, like you never really went back.
Yeah. So I did pick that one up again. Yeah. What have you been listening to?
Well, I've also been playing Best Fiends, but I'm going to delve into that a little bit later. What have I been listening to? I've been listening to some Olivia O'Brien because she has a new music coming out. I feel like I've been listening to a lot of really nostalgic stuff because of our podcast that I'm doing with my friend.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
So I've been listening to like Dream and Dream Street and like all the bands that I used to listen to in like the late 90s and stuff.
Cool.
So that's been fun. I really enjoy going back and listening to like old girl groups and boy bands. And because we were sent an Echelon bike, I've been doing workouts. So a lot of the workouts I've been doing have like a lot of that really old, like nostalgic music from the early 2000s too. So.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So I've just been listening to like a lot of like lectures online and stuff.
Yeah. A lot of like CIA, FBI.
Yeah. I don't know. I just kind of like find that fascinating and like how they got to where they are. And like those people I find are very like, I don't want to say one track mind, but what motivates them is, to me, seems to be like FBI anyway. They're like very motivated by like manipulating the counterpart into thinking that they're in control.
Yeah.
Like that's their whole
thing. I manipulate you into thinking you're in control, but really I'm control of all.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want you to think, though.
I'm kidding. So. That's not how I feel at all.
I'm just kidding. But, see what I mean there? That's what I did?
Yeah.
That's very FBI, you know?
You'd be like, you think that you're controlling me, controlling you, controlling me, but really, it's you controlling me, controlling you, controlling me, controlling you.
Right. Where CIA is a little different. CIA is more like, I'm going to let that little sign that you did, because they do a lot of like Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
When there's a tax evasion, and they'll like put someone in a room and like ask them a bunch of questions. Like typically there's a CIA officer there, like who's counting the amount of like divergencies that you're having, you know, so they're like looking at all the signs and like seeing what you're doing. And so they're counting the amount of lies or little signs you're giving off. So that's about what CIA is all about. So FBI and CIA is a little different because FBI deals with more like negotiations and things like that. And
yeah,
CIA is more like figuring out if you're lying.
The thing is, I feel like if I was being interrogated by someone I thought was in the CIA, I would purposely be giving off as many of those clues as possible, even when I wasn't lying, just because it would be fun to throw them off.
Right.
Because I know that there's certain things, like if you look up to either the right or the left, like while you're thinking, like that's usually a sign that you're like one direction when you look off, it's like you thinking and recalling something. And the other way, it's like you thinking of a lie.
Right.
And like there's little tells like that. So if you know that they're looking for those tells, you can also kind
of see, they did talk about that too. And they said that people think that they can do that. And here's the thing. People will also tell a truth to try to get you to think that they're good people.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll like tell a long truth and then you'll be like, oh, you know, this is a good person. But being a CIA agent, you're more likely to be like engaged in the sign. So like,
and they'll be like, they're purposely telling us this story to win us over versus. Right.
Also, they pay attention to things like, are they answering the question directly? Mm-hmm. Or are they kind of saying, I would never, like the things like, I would never do that.
Like I'm that, this type of person.
Right. Like saying I wouldn't those do that. Types of things will like, those are like triggers. Right.
Which so, we play a lot of Town of Salem recently. And like, you have to lie quite frequently because I try not to too. But then it's also like a tell if they're like, well, what are you? And you're like, I don't need to tell you what my role is.
And they're like, they won't tell us what their role is. Get them up and hang them, you know?
And then you're like,
yeah. And you're just
hashtag
like,
dog army. And they're
which
like,
which never works.
It works if you're a jester, usually pretty well. I actually really like posting it when you're a werewolf though, because it's funny because you're a werewolf and it's dog army. Anyway. I feel like we should take a quick second to talk about our sponsors.
Yeah, let's do it. The dreams of vacation and enjoying the fun of life are turning back into reality for us. We don't let our fear of financial setbacks keep us from doing the things we love, and neither should you. Credit Karma helps keep our financial goals in check, and we think it can help you too. The newness of being more financially conscious can be nerve-wracking. We always want to know beforehand if it'll work out and whatnot. Credit Karma can give you more confidence. And that peace of mind before making a decision is priceless. It can feel daunting at first when we don't know exactly what to prepare for. With Credit Karma, you can be more informed about what's ahead. Credit Karma game-changing technology shows tailored offers for credit cards and personal loans that are attuned to your financial level so you can apply with confidence knowing more. They'll use your credit and other financial information to show you custom recommendations for the next steps in financial awareness. Whether it's cash back, travel rewards, or consolidated debt, Credit Karma has your back and will help you find offers that fit your goals. Something I love about Credit Karma is how easy and user-friendly their browser is. They make it seamless to browse their options without stress or hassle. They give you the power to make an informed decision. Credit Karma, apply with confidence. Go to creditkarma.com/podcast to learn more and find offers tailored just for you. That's creditkarma.com/podcast, or you can see your offers on Credit Karma app. Apply with confidence today. Go to creditkarma.com/podcast or the Credit Karma app.
Your closest friends are always there when you need them most. Good times, bad times, between times, they've always got you. And you know who else has always got you? Best Fiends. My favorite visual puzzle game. It's like one of those things where you can set it down for 2-3 weeks, pick it back up, and you're like, oh my gosh, it's my best friend all over again. It helps like burn stress. It's beautiful colors. And they're always adding new levels. So they literally have thousands of levels. I'm on level about like 461. Andrew's mom is on level almost 5,000. She's burning through them, but there's always more. So she's never going to hit the end, which is absolutely incredible. And you get to collect all these beautiful, like super fun bugs, which help you blow up the different things, have different ways to help you get to the next level. And I am just obsessed. We've been playing for what? A year and a half, and it's still fun. So if you're itching for a game that's got your back, then Best Fiends is probably the game for you. Just don't blame me if you get a little bit too into it too. So download the 5-star rated puzzle game Best Fiends for free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Friends Without the R, Best Fiends.
All right, we're back.
Back and better than ever.
Back in black.
I am wearing black leggings.
AC/DC, Back in Black.
Wasn't Back to Black was the name of an Amy Winehouse album as well.
Oh, cool.
I have that on vinyl, or I had it on vinyl. Gave it to your sister. Cool. But
so you don't have it on vinyl, is what you're saying?
I did, but then we broke my record player, and then Andrew's little sister had gotten a record player, so I gifted a lot of my old.
We broke it while moving. Happens. Stuff gets broken.
It wasn't when we were moving. We just went to plug it into the wall and plugged the Theragun charger into the back of it. And I guess they're different wattages, even though they have the same looking plug.
We actually were moving, but we didn't like drop it while moving. We just we got the cord switched out.
We were going to play it while we were packing, and then wrong cord.
So, okay, I've got a question. What is your opinion on Prison Upgrade?
Prison Upgrade in the sense of like putting more money and making prisons nicer?
No, as in like you can pay $82 a night and upgrade your stay in your prison.
Heck no.
Well, it exists.
I know it exists. I am not for it. Oh. I don't like that. And it makes me feel sick. It sickens me. It really upsets me because it's basically our system is already so like screwed towards people who don't have money, that can't pay bail, that can't like, that don't have these things. And then these millionaires, billionaires can do whatever crimes they want and then stay in a beautiful suite with all these options, like in this prison. And then it's like, how fair is that? Like,
well,
like make them be in the same kind of room, sleeping on the same slab of concrete as everybody else. Like everyone should have equal treatment and it shouldn't be, oh, you have more money. Like in that case, like we'll make this a nice experience for you.
What if they earned that money though? Doing a service to society.
So, okay. So I just thought of one way where I feel like people would be able to upgrade. I feel like if you were in prison and you worked, because like they do jobs within prisons, correct? So like they may work at the library at the prison, or they may work as a janitor at the prison. Like everyone is given some sort of job, and they're usually given like a very small wage that they can spend on commissary stuff, etc. I think if those people want to bank up a certain amount of hours, and like every however like 100 hours they can get like some sort of small upgrade, or every 1,000 hours or whatever of work they put in, they can upgrade their room. I think that's fair.
Right. But what about people that come in for white collar crimes and they're just getting their butts whooped every day because they're not really acclimated to that type of lifestyle, but they do have the financial resources to pay to upgrade a room?
No, I think they still need to deal with the same thing that everyone else does.
Well,
and the thing is, if they want to stay in their own, like, I don't want to say their own room, but like, if they want to stay in their own little space and not go out and like chat with everyone else or have dinner with everyone else, like if they want to be in their own little whatever, that's fine. But I don't think people should get preferential treatment because they have money.
Right. But do you think that,
because you can have poor people who committed a white collar crime that get their butts whooped.
Does it seem to like, what would be punishment to you? Like, is getting their butts whooped every day and every other day in prison punishment? Is that why you're thinking that they
be able to upgrade? I just don't think people should be given preferential treatment because of the amount of money they have or the color of their skin. Like, as a white person, I don't think you should go to prison and be like, oh, I'm white, I'm gonna get beat up, and get like preferential treatment for that.
Even if they're paying for it.
Even if they're paying for it. I think especially if they're paying for it.
What if the money, would it be too much if the money was going back in to elevate the lives of the other prisoners?
No. But I do think that, I don't want to say like guards, but like,
like if it was like a tax,
if they had psychologists there that said these people are not going to be able to rehabilitate back into society in these circumstances, this person, I think, needs to have their own room, their own like space in order to like rehabilitate them better.
Like a psych ward.
Or not like necessarily psych ward, but I think
they already
that,
got those.
But I think that it should be based on like the therapists and the, or psychologists or whatever, in like the wards and everyone like looking at each individual situation and seeing who just cannot, like, I don't want to say thrive because no one in prison is thriving, but like if there's no way that they're going to be able to like get out of it in one piece as a human, and they're like, we need to put this person in a different room or in a different place, I think that would be fair.
Right.
But also, okay, I think we should just switch to the Norwegian prison system to begin with, and everything would be fantastic. So,
well, I don't think that. Well, do you? Would it even be? How would you do that? I mean, because we have such a big population, like, what would you? How would you even switch? Like, what would
I feel like we're kind of screwed at this point because we started with the prison system we have, but they are working on making it illegal to have the for-profit prisons, which I think is a start.
Well, that's where that's where the paid upgrade is.
Well, yeah.
So, I think they call it pay to stay.
Yeah. I think we're going to see some things changing over the next 10, 15 years.
I mean, it's been happening since I've read an article today about it.
Well, I know, but they're now making pay, like different states are now making.
We have pay to stay prisons here in California.
We just voted to get rid of them in our last election.
Right.
So those are getting phased out here. And I think they're going to continue getting phased out throughout the country.
I was listening to something really funny today. It was just a lecture. And they were saying, it was a lecture to like an Indian, country, India.
Yeah.
But it was a lecture in America, but it was majority of India. I think it may have been, it could have been in India. And they were saying, they were asking him about the trolley consequence, where if you had to pull a thing, and he says, well, I would adopt a similar stature to our country's theme and do inaction. So they're like, I'll do nothing. I'll just adopt what our country does, is our theme that our country is
like, turn a blind eye and be like,
turn a blind eye. Yeah. Which I was like, well, I think that it's probably the right thing to do for the wrong reasons. But anyway, I do have another topic if you want to get off that depressing state.
Of course.
Okay. What do you think about amusement parks and paying to skip the line?
I don't like it. I actually like what Disney does with the Fast Pass, where you can go a couple hours beforehand, go to like the little kiosk, be like, I want to ride Space Mountain, right? And it'll give you like a time where it'll be like, come back at 2:45. And then you get to like kind of skip to the front of the line that way, because it's like you're planning ahead. You're saying, I want to go. I don't want to stand in line right now, but it then gives you a future time.
So same reason you don't think that there should be privilege to being wealthy. So what would be the incentive to work hard and make extra money and like become what's the incentive to do that, go a little bit beyond?
Because
we wouldn't have Amazon, right? Like, we wouldn't have these huge conglomerates. We wouldn't have Apple if people didn't have incentive to become that, right?
Well, I mean, Jeff Bezos is going to space.
Well, is that a form of privilege? Would you say that's...
I mean, he created the company that is doing the civilian trip to space, and then he gets to go because he created the company and he paid the money for it. So, I mean, yeah, it's a form of privilege. I think that... But there's a difference...
How do you get away from that, though? Is that even...
But there's a difference between, like, being able to afford houses and cars and, like, stepping over other people because you have money.
Right. So if I just bought an amusement park, then I wouldn't need to pay to skip the lines.
Because you'd be like, I own all the rides. They're mine. I can just skip the line.
So what kind of privilege is that?
I mean, honestly, I would hope if you owned a place that you would be going like before or after hours or something anyway, or like standing in line and actually chatting with people and hearing about their experience.
That's a good point.
So it's like...
That's right.
I don't know. But when you hear like the Kardashians, like they go to Disneyland a lot and they always skip all the lines and go straight to the front. And it's like, how is that fair that because you're a celebrity and you have money, you can skip in front of the people that have been waiting for 90 minutes to get on Space Mountain?
Your argument then is that if you're of that wealthy stature, then you should have enough, virtuous value that you're not going to abuse your role.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Virtuous. Virtuous is in like, you're not going to remove people's dignity. You're not going to take advantage.
I mean,
take advantage of innocent people, kind of like, you know, gluttony and all that. So it is kind of comes back to that though, doesn't it?
I mean, that's why our business is called Fresh Ethic, right?
I know.
You know, some sort of ethical code and values.
Well, I honestly believe you can, I mean, I don't have to believe it, but you can prove empirically that the commandments are, you know, wrong. What you do, like gluttony is wrong. Mm. I can prove.
Oh, you mean like wrong. The seven deadly sins, like, type thing?
Empirically,
like, yeah.
I can prove that those things are wrong
or negative,
like based on, you know, factual information and just like empirical things. Anyway, I have another topic, but I want to hear.
But how do you feel about Jeff Bezos going to space?
How do I feel?
Yeah. You want to hear how I feel?
I feel like am I going to be in for it?
No, I just hope he dies and not him as like,
oh my God.
No. I don't want to be like, oh, I don't like him as a person. I hope he dies. But I feel like in general, there's like that top 1% who think that they are just can do anything and they're invincible and they can just pay money and do whatever they want. And it doesn't necessarily have to be him, but I feel like those people have to realize that what they're doing is freaking dangerous. Elon Musk still blows up every freaking rocket he tries to put into the atmosphere.
Big rockets, right?
Yeah, like billion-dollar rockets. And it's like, and Jeff Bezos thinks he's just going to like hop on this spaceship and just go to space and have a grand old time. And it's like, realize that space travel is still not super safe.
So, like,
you may want to believe it is, you pay the money, you can like say you were the first one to do it, but it's like, I don't know. I just want those guys to be like taken down a notch and be like, you are still mortal. Like you can still die.
Right. And would you say that he's chicken if he backed out now?
I just think the whole civilian spaceships and like in space is just dumb to begin with, but you know.
You're like, he said he's going to do it. He's got to follow through now.
I'm just imagining Josh Gad on Avenue 5, like playing Judd and being completely detached. That's how I see a lot of these guys, Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, wanting to go to space. It's like these guys just have a lot of money. They think it's going to be great. It's going to look great. They can go to space. But they are like so detached from anything that's actually happening.
Yeah. So I think we have like a major issue in our workforce society right now, and everybody's hiring, by the way. But I think that somehow the dignity of working a blue collar job or just like a 9-to-5 has been removed. Like you've become like, you know, nobody's like glorifying working as an Amazon pawn, you know, like.
Oh, like a delivery driver. Like, oh,
yeah,
warehouse
that's what
worker.
I want to be doing. Yeah. So what ruins the dignity in work? Like that's, I think, is an important question because like, what is it? Like, how can we correct that?
Yeah, because I feel like our grandparents' generation and even our parents' generation, like if you weren't working hard and you weren't working a 9-to-5, like you were looked down upon because you weren't working hard. And then our generation is like, oh, if you're working hard, you're not doing it right.
Well,
like you should not be working hard and be like, I think a lot of it has to do with social media.
What I think is,
and like a false
sense.
I like
working hard.
Yeah. But I think people
like, I like putting in work.
I think social media makes it where people feel like, oh, like I'm looked down upon because I have to work this job. Whereas these people are just traveling around the world and they just have a bunch of followers and like they make all this money. And that's glorified.
Yeah.
Like those jobs are glorified. Like what we do podcasting, I feel like a lot of times people like glorify.
It's valued.
Where
in society, yeah,
and it's we're not valued, but I feel like
right now,
but I feel like sometimes our families are like, yeah, you probably just sit around on your couch and like talk to yourselves, like that's a job, right? Like that's your job is you sit in your sweatpants and you drink wine and like,
okay,
whatever.
Well, but you're kind of getting off topic.
But what I'm saying is like people say that, but it's like I feel like I value when people work really hard. I'm like, and we've both worked jobs that we've worked very hard. And right. Like and we've worked long hours.
My dignity anyway, when I was working hard, mm-hmm. had been removed by management. Yes. Just because they just want to get a level up, right? Like they just want to like get a raise and look good, or they want to tear someone else down so they feel better.
It's like a chain of command thing where like if you're not at the top, there's gonna be someone that's trying to like keep you down.
So for me, what ruins the dignity in work is
poor management.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor leaders, honestly, because what I look for in management is leadership. And I don't see a lot of leadership in our workforce. And mainly, I think that's, I want to say, due to the lack of leadership in, it's not even millennials. It's the lack of leadership in the before generations. Like we're talking about Jeff Bezos. Like what kind of leader is that person, right? Mm-hmm. I guess he's the type of leader to shoot himself into space.
Evidently.
Well, is that kind of like, I guess that is a form if you, that's like a very like primitive form of leadership, in my opinion. Like I'll be the first one into space, right?
I'm going to beat Elon Musk there. I feel like,
right. Like the front lines. But I think that's a very like primitive way to think about it, because what I'm looking for is like, I want them to see and try to fix what's already an issue rather than like, you know what I mean? Ignoring what's going on.
Jeff Bezos, you have warehouse workers who have to pee in bottles because they're not allowed to take bathroom breaks.
And this guy's not paying taxes.
And you're not paying taxes, but you're going to go to space.
This guy's not
paying
taxes.
So, you know, it was worth it, right? It's worth putting down thousands of workers.
He doesn't believe that he owes a debt of gratitude to the state that allowed him to become what he is and grow what he has. So, like, I don't understand. Like, what is the deal? How is that a form of leadership? You know, like if you don't feel a sense of gratitude to what allowed you to become what you are, especially if you're on the top like that.
Yeah. I feel like we got to get off this topic or we could talk about it forever. But something that I was going to mention is I was watching part of the like lawyer trial thing with the pipeline that was hacked. And what I learned and then saw articles about afterwards today as well is that Bitcoin is actually more traceable and cryptocurrency is actually more traceable than they've been pretending it is. Because for a long time, they're like, oh, it's encrypted. You can't see where money is sent or where it's received. But then this trial happens and you actually find out the government can see exactly where it's being sent and exactly where it's being received. And that's why this whole trial is happening, because they can see, because they paid the ransom in Bitcoin. Like they can see where that was sent and they can see who received that money.
So what did they find out?
Well, they're still doing the trial and they haven't.
Is that why they're having the trial?
I believe that's a big part of it. Is
because it looks like a payoff.
Because it looks like it may be a little bit sketchier than they originally were thinking, because they're able to track that. And before, and people like that, the pipeline and stuff probably assumed, like most people did, that it was encrypted and it wasn't traceable.
I've got a question. Is it actually traceable or are they just...
Oh, it's actually traceable. And
like they can see whose pocket's going in? Because they can see the money going out, but I don't know if they can see
I think they can see like the VPN like address. They can see like, they can see where the computer is located, where the
VPN
phone is located. You can tell if it's been spoofed.
Right, but... If somebody was hacking into something like, I don't even know what that even means.
I don't
like,
know, but the pipeline? Thing is, if it was sent to an employee at the pipeline, they could very easily see that that's who it was being sent to. Like that it was sent to an employee was there.
Yeah, I don't know the details. I have to look up.
I don't know if it's just VPN. I don't know if they can actually track, like if each person has like some sort of code or number that can be traced to them specifically or whatever.
Did you hear that Slovakia made, or is it Slovakia that made Bitcoin an official currency?
I heard, I don't know if it was Slovakia or was it the Czech Republic, somewhere over there.
Slovakia.
Yeah, I know.
And they said it because it was going to bring more tourism in.
Yeah. Which, I mean, is...
I mean, if you own a ton of Bitcoin, you're Bitcoin rich. Yeah, sure. I mean, are those the people you want to bring to your community?
You do want people... Like, there are countries like that that are struggling to get tourism, especially after COVID. So I understand them being like, oh, we accept this. It'll be great. But also... they can also lose a lot of money by people doing really sketchy, weird stuff with the crypto. So
yeah,
like it's a gamble. That's a gamble.
Yeah. I do think that you should have to, if you're going to use crypto as a form of investment, that there should be a way to tax it. Like they need to set that up.
Which when I did my taxes, I know it asked me if I had invested in any cryptocurrency and how much. So right. I don't know if they're like honor system taxing it,
which that's the thing right now that's going around is that like you don't get taxed on stocks and crypto that you put money into. It's
just when you take it out,
right? And then they go set it back and they look at the gains. So that's kind of what's been happening with, you know, these people, like these moguls, right? Which, whereas like they're not pulling it out and they're taking loans out on their name and then they're writing all that money off when they do take it out to pay off the loans. So it's like, that's a super big loophole.
So did you hear that Chris Harrison resigned from his position on The Bachelor?
Do you think he resigned or do you think that they pressured him?
He resigned, but do you want to hear what he asked for in order to resign?
Well, yeah, I'm just brewing with anticipation.
He was going to resign, but he said, in order for me to resign, I am demanding $25 million to leave the show.
OMG.
And they gave it to him.
OMG.
Yeah.
What was his wage, though?
Evidently, he was making, I think he makes $2 to $5 million a season or something.
Wow.
Or one to two, whatever it is. Basically, he was assuming that's how much he would make throughout until he was to retire or the show was to end anyway.
So they just want to pay out. Yeah.
So basically he just like demanded this huge payout and they gave it to him. And then Bachelor in Paradise is coming out and they announced David Spade. And I was like, that's pretty fun. But then they also announced Little John and Lance Bass and like
getting a little bit weird.
And I was like, how many hosts are they going
to
have here?
Why haven't they reached out to us? You know,
like
we could come on as a duo.
We could be the new bartenders. We could replace Wells and we could be there making margaritas.
Yeah, why don't you pay Wells some money? Get him off there.
Which Wells, Wells, I think, gets paid an okay amount for going on there.
He gets paid hourly.
No. But I think he's probably getting paid like $400 or $500 a day. He's not making like any insane amount of money.
Look, Lindsay has exceptional negotiation skills. She will find out all the gossip.
Oh my gosh. And so I was reading this thing about Dean, who had been on Bachelor in Paradise, I think twice. He was on The Bachelorette and he was in talks to be The Bachelor at one point in time. But I guess the first time he went on Bachelor in Paradise, they offered him whatever, $200 a day to go on the show. And then he heard from the other people like, oh, you have to negotiate because like you're like the hot commodity this season. So you should be asking for more money.
Dean. Yeah.
So he then asked for more money. He got like $400 an episode.
It's awful.
Right. So then the next season when they asked him to come on, I guess he asked for like $10,000 an episode and they did give it to him. They gave him like $700 an episode or something.
That's still real bad.
But they like guaranteed like that he would get paid for the full.
Like if they're going to make you into something like that, and blast you all over.
But I guess like everything. The second time he was like, if I'm coming on here, you got to give me $10,000 an episode. And they're just like, you are so above anything else anyone has asked for. But he was like, might as well throw a number out there and see if they'll give it to me. But I thought it was funny. honestly, though, there are a few people on there that obviously should be getting more money than other people.
Yeah.
Because some people are so boring and they're on and off of there so fast that I'm like, yeah, you should be getting paid about $200 a day to have vacation.
Yeah.
And other people, I'm like, yeah, that person should be getting paid $1,000 because you're running their name through the mud.
Exactly.
Like,
that's exactly
you're ruining right. this person's reputation.
And it's like, that's their livelihood right there. So
like, make it worth it.
Time, right? Like, that's mm-hmm. a very short livelihood that you're ruining. Now you've kind of condemned them to a certain role.
Yeah.
You know, that's like what's her face that was on The Apprenticeship.
Omarosa,
yeah. Where it's like, you know, she's a bad guy, bad girl, and then like she's like actually seems to be a decent person, like.
But then Trump all the time was like, "You're the reason that Michael had a heart attack and died," and it's like,
well, she got on his S list, you know, and wasn't she working at the White House for a second?
Yeah, and then so, she spoke out about it and really
right. She's like a genuinely okay person, and then you know you're out of here, you know.
And I think because she was a black woman in business, like when she stood up for herself, it was seen as like bitchy,
right? And I think,
and it's like yeah. if a male said the same thing and did the same thing, like people would be like, "Good for him,
sure,
great business guy,
maybe."
But because it was someone who
not always,
but I feel like because of who she was, her like acting even similarly to how Trump would run a business or something else was seen as being like rude or bitchy versus a good business person. So that kind of sucks.
Honestly, that was a really like The Apprentice was a decent show. The Apprentice.
I did enjoy it, especially Celebrity Apprentice.
Yeah, I'm not going to dog on it. Because it was a decent show, and
but it also
as a celebrity, I think Donald Trump was an okay person or whatever you want to say.
I also
think he was shady as F.
I also didn't mind when they replaced him with Arnold. Where I was like, Arnold did a good job hosting too. Basically,
whatever happened to that show just
well ceased to exist. Or, Donald Trump became president, and then no one wanted to watch the show anymore because he freaking killed it. So
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I haven't gone back. I'm not going to go back.
I mean, it's not on anymore.
Like, I do not want to see any more of that guy. He's, what's that called when you outwear your welcome?
Yeah.
He's outworn his
welcome. That was definitely a show, though, when I was, like, freshly out of high school and college, where people said, oh, what reality show would he go on? I was always like, oh, I want to be on The Apprentice.
And now I'm like,
yeah.
Threw up. Yeah. That's how I am. Ruined it for me.
So we are out of time, but we will talk to you next week for another episode of the Wine 30 podcast.